Good morning. It's lovely to be with you. Thank you for an amazing breakfast. I don't think I've ever had a cooked breakfast at a ladies' breakfast, so I've just been raving about it on the table. It's cooked breakfast. You can see my priorities. I went to one ladies' breakfast, and this dear lady next to me, as you know, we were just going, she says, you know, will you be able to eat? You know, thinking, I'm going, that's why I've come. It's not just why I've come, but let me just move these around. Oh, I don't think that music is on, is it? Oh, is it? Then I've... Oh, you're right. Thank you. I hadn't realised it. Yes, as you heard, I spend quite a lot of my time in a variety of things. I run training courses for companies, and those companies could be public sector, private sector, charity sector. I coach individuals, I do some writing. So I love having a whole range of different things that I do. And I'll talk to you more about prayer works as well. I live in Staines, so this was really lovely for me. I go to church actually over in Wimbledon or Colliers Wood, to Oasis Baptist Church there. And I thought as we were looking at work and stress and the power of prayer, what I'd get you to do is just, you know, with somebody next to you, I'd like you to say one thing that you like about your work, and that work might be in the home, it might be paid, it might be unpaid, might be out in a whole range of areas, but one thing you like about it and one thing you don't. You'll just want to carry on chatting now, won't you? But would anybody like to shout out one of the things they love about their work?
People.
People. People. Yeah?
Variety.
Lovely. Any customers? Yeah? Sorry? Yes, the positive. Sorry? Flexibility, yeah. Yeah, lovely, thank you. Yeah, thank you. And anything we don't like? And again, shout out.
People.
Yeah, it can be all the same things, can't it? And it can actually be the same person on different days, can't it? We love them one day. It's like... Okay, yeah. Actually, the workplace is such a rich place for so many of us, but it has its difficulties as well. I want this morning, because we don't have a whole range of time, to give you one simple key for being fruitful in your workplace. And I'll come to what that is in a minute. But let's just talk about what being fruitful in your workplace might mean. And so... it could be a range of different ones. I want to say, first and foremost, it's about doing your work well. So, you know, we can have this whole idea that being a Christian in the workplace is sort of something other than the work that you're doing. And I just am passionate that it is about doing our work well and blessing people. Because each one of us, to even get here today, have relied on the work of other people. So, you know, somebody plumbed... you know, all the stuff that got water to enable me to have a shower. Can you see? Somebody else made our clothing. Somebody else tarmacked the roads. So we are so dependent on the work that people do. And so doing our work well blesses people, blesses us, is part of our fruitfulness. I was fascinated that the first person to be mentioned in the Bible as filled with the Spirit is Bezalel, in Exodus 35, who was a craftsman who worked with metals, precious stones, and woods. But we also minister love and compassion and time and all these other things to our colleagues. And I think I'm often shocked at the need for that. I had the privilege of doing some work with the board of a large hospital, and I got to coach the chairman of the board, who was this wonderful sort of crusty older man who told me that he believed in constructive aggression. I won't go there. But actually, we were in this board meeting, the HR director, who was well-respected and well-liked, was coming in from a flight, a transatlantic flight, to join the board meeting. And we got a message to say that the flight was 2 hours delayed, so that he would be delayed. Anyway, he arrives, and I'm just sitting opposite him. I'm not facilitating the meeting anyway. I'm just sort of sitting in. And I just think, gosh, one, he's looking great for having come off a transatlantic flight. But we'd already had our coffee break. So I just looked across and just went, he just nods. I go and get the coffee, bring it to him, just go back to my place. No big deal. At the end of the day, he comes up to me and goes, thanks for the coffee. I said, oh, no problem. And he stopped me and he said, no, thank you for the coffee. So I was desperate for a cup of coffee. But I was so aware of being late, I didn't like to ask. And I just went, this is HR director, well-respected, well-liked, and we all know that he's just come off it. And he doesn't feel able to ask for a cup of coffee. And so never underestimate the small things, or that seem small to us, that can actually be a big thing. And that's part of our fruitfulness, to just be doing those things. And, you know, I wasn't conscious of doing it. It's just what I would do for any delegate who's late on a training course. So it's just part of what I do. But it brings blessing. We might be fruitful because we stand up for justice in some way in our workplace, or stand up for things being done in a good and godly way. As part of LICC, the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity, we run something called Executive Toolbox, which takes 35 sort of business execs through three 24-hour modules looking at what it means to be a Christian in the workplace. And one of them, who works for a large car manufacturer, was talking to us about forced ranking in his workplace and how the way that their systems work, and some of you may have this where you work, you know, you have to grade your team, and 20 or 25% of them have to be graded as below par to get this sort of forced ranking. And he actually challenged that system. He said, look, all of my team have worked well. None of them are below par. I'm not going to grade 25% of them in that way. And actually, by challenging the system, he got it changed. He stood up for what was just in his workplace. That's fruitfulness. And our prayers change the atmosphere. I'm going to say more about that as we go in. But we have a whole role at whatever level we're at in any workplace, be that our home, be it outside of the home, be it in, you know, a Christian workplace. I don't have a view of what's Christian, not with a workplace that can't actually be Christian. Only people in it can be Christian. So, but we can change the atmosphere. And you see, when we change the atmosphere, it's almost like the greenhouse effect. Different things grow. So our prayers change the atmosphere. And one of the things that I've got for each of you is just a photocopy of an article that I've written for UCB that talks about prayer works and our role in changing the atmosphere. So make sure you have one of those before you go. And thank you for photocopying them for me. So what is the key? What is the key to being fruitful? And I'm going to say the key is having a good memory. You may not think that that's what I was going to say. Having a good memory. Because actually, we're ineffective and unfruitful when we forget. And in fact, I define stress very simply as forgetfulness. Forgetting who we are, forgetting who God is, and forgetting that there's an enemy. And so I'm going to look at each of those areas with you and say, what does it take to remember those three things? Because if we remember those three things, we'll be fruitful. And so let's look firstly at what happens when we forget who God is. when we forget, do feel free to turn your chairs around, don't get twisted. When we forget who God is, it will show up in two key ways. It will show up in pride, and it will show up in anxiety. Moses on the border of the Promised Land in Deuteronomy 8. And remember, the Israelites have been in the desert for 40 years. It's the second time they're on the borders of the Promised Land. The first time they turned back because of the giants, because of the fortified cities, thinking we can't do it. Now a new generation is there, and the only remaining ones from the older generation, at this point Moses is still with them, and Joshua and Caleb. And Moses says this about going into the Promised Land. Bear in mind, for 40 years, they've lived on manna. They've lived on daily provision from God. Okay, so they've woken up each morning and it's been there. And they've had to trust each day that it's going to be there the next day. And he says this about going into the land. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build your fine houses and settle down, when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God, who brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. You see, pride is insidious. And there's a right celebration of our work. God looked at his work and said, it is good. But actually, it's very subtle, you know. We gradually start to think, I've done this. I can do this. Actually, I don't need God. And I almost want to say it's in the areas where we're most skilled that we're most likely to forget who God is and that we need him. I was doing some work for a training organisation whereby they held the contract and they actually sort of fielded me as one of their trainers. And I was going into a rate negotiation with them. And in negotiating that rate, I had an idea of the rate that I wanted to achieve. And so I started praying about this, partly because the last time I'd had a rate negotiation with them, it had been sort of fairly difficult. So I just was praying about this and, you know, telling the Lord quite clearly, really, what rate I wanted to achieve. And, you know, it'd be nice if I could have his assistance in achieving that. And he goes, Bev, what I want you to do is to go in there and let them decide the rate. I said, no, Lord, you don't actually understand. I run training courses in negotiation skills. This is not how you do it. And he goes, so are you going to trust me? yes, I said. Well, that got tested the morning before I went in because a fellow trainer phoned up and said, oh, I've just had my rate negotiation. I've achieved this rate. And I thought, that's the rate I was going for. Wow, I can use that. And then God says, so you're going to do it your way, are you? I went, oh, okay. And I have to say that I went into this rate negotiation with a very poor attitude, which was, Lord, help me to be vaguely happy with the outcome. And so I go in, and I just thought, if I don't say something straight off, I won't say it. So the person I was negotiating with, I just said, oh, before we start, there's something I need to say to you. You know the rate that you sell me on at, and you know the margin you need to achieve. So I just want to tell you that whatever rate you decide is fine with me. Well, he totally relaxed. He said, You don't know how good that is for me to hear. He said, you won't know this, but I was in a rate negotiation this morning with another trainer. He said, they've actually pushed me for a rate that I don't feel I can afford. I've agreed the rate, but won't be giving them any business. He said, based on your attitude in this negotiation and your track record with us, you are now our trainer of choice for a huge project that's just come through the door. He literally gave me the list of dates and said, take your pick. Which, for a freelance trainer, is extraordinary. I wasn't vaguely happy. I was delirious when I came out of there. But I so nearly missed it because, you see, I thought I knew how to do this. And it was only because it had been difficult last time that I really made it a focus of prayer. And I just want to say that it's so often in the areas that we feel we can do it, that we don't bother God. Can you see? Because I've got this one sorted. And pride just is insidious. It takes root. Marc Dupont, in his book Pursuing Open Heaven, said this: to spend a lot of time in prayer, waiting on God, and merely worshipping him may seem a waste of time to many, just as to many it seemed wasteful when the woman poured out costly perfume on the feet of Jesus. The truth is, however, that it is humbling to cry out to God. It is humbling to spend time just waiting on his presence. Prayer by very nature repels the proud, because in essence, to seriously pray is to recognize that what we need most, only God can provide. I mentioned that anxiety can be another indication that we've forgotten who God is. You see, not only is he the source of our skills and abilities, he's the King of Kings, he's the Lord of Lords. He's our provider, and you know, so often we can think that it's our work that provides our finances, our resources. That might be the channel he uses, but he is the source. One of the things, you know, those of you that have done things like Myers-Briggs and things like that, I'm off the scale intuitive, which means that detail freaks me out. Okay, it's always the practical things. And I was going to go and speak at a Salvation Army conference. And I was just worried about certain details. And there were certain things going on about that conference that I just, again, that anxiety increased. And I just, it was like, Lord, these are the things. I'm not worried about standing up and speaking. If I feel God's given me something to say, that doesn't bother me. But the practical things do. Anyway, the weekend before the conference, I had three girls from the church coming over for a sleepover. And I use the word girls quite loosely. And so they were coming sort of Saturday lunchtime. And we were going to have a light lunch, go out for a walk. Then they were staying over. And in the morning, I realised I had run out of washing up liquid. For some reason, I'd put an empty washing up liquid bottle away. And so it wasn't there. Anyway, girls arrive. Kaz brings a fantastic cake. Bernie brings chocolate. Fantastic, you see. Anyway, we have our lunch. We go into the kitchen and we're just stacking stuff away. And Kaz says, oh, let's wash up. I said, oh, no, no, I need to get some washing up liquid. Now, bear in mind, the corner shop is like 200 yards away. So I need to get that. We'll get some when we're out and we'll do the washing up later. We then glance over to this bag that is sitting there that is Florence's. And Florence is in another room. And sticking out of the top is a bottle of fairy liquid. So we call her in and we say, Florence, you've brought fairy liquid. She goes, yes, yeah. I asked God what I should bring. And he said, washing up liquid. On the day that I really needed to know that God was the God of the details, he gives me the most wonderful reminder. And you see, I want to emphasise this was not a big deal in the sense of the washing up liquid itself. The corner shop was 200 yards away. What was a big deal was that I needed to remember that God looks after the details. And so he used my friend Florence. And so although that wasn't the brand that I was using before, I now always buy Fairy Liquid. Why? Because every time I wash up, I remember who God is. He's the God of the details. So we need to improve our memory. We need to take time rehearsing. It might be passages of scripture, maybe some of the Psalms, reminding ourselves day in, day out, who God is. Because the minute we forget, we become unfruitful and anxious. So let's just take a moment in quiet for you to remember who God is. King of kings, Lord of lords, but also who he is to you. So just take a moment in quiet. And just hearing that phone reminded me that we do actually have technical things that we can use to remind us. It doesn't all have to come from those grey cells. So, for instance, I wear a buzzer. It's just a Gym Boss buzzer. And it just vibrates every 15 minutes. And it's a way of helping me remember throughout the day, whatever I'm doing, to reconnect with who God is. So as I said, there's technology now that can help us in very practical ways to remember who God is. But we also need to remember who we are. And again, we forget that. You see, if our identity is firmly rooted in God, then we will know that we're his beloved daughter. And we can live from a different place than most people live. Most people live from a place of needing to earn approval and needing to earn that sense of being affirmed and recognized by others. When you know you're God's beloved daughter, you live from a place of approval. This is already established. And I don't know if you're like me, but it's like I can move from living from approval to living for approval in the space of one sentence. So we move. And again, it's about remembering who we are. John 1 John 3 verse 1 says, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, for that is what we are." And I want to say that perhaps it's in the workplace that this gets most challenged. Because all the time there's a sort of grading that's going on. You know, the competition can be encouraged. You know, have you done better than your colleagues? Have you done better than your last set of figures? Can you see there's always this pressure? And it's like, whose approval are we seeking? And the reality is that it's very difficult to go against the flow, because we do want our boss's approval. We do want our colleagues' approval. We do want our customers' approval. We do want to fit in. And that's a natural feeling. But actually, if I live for those things, then they're going to evidence themselves in, again, an anxiety about what people think of me. You know, what will they think if I go home on time? And they may tell me. I was doing some work for an IT company, and one of the women there said, you know, she had an appointment. It was just after work, so she went home at exactly 5:30. And her colleagues looked up and said, "Oh, part-time, are we?" You know, and so there will be those comments that come that say, actually, to fit in round here, you need to behave in a certain way. And you can only resist that pressure when you know who you are in God, that you are a beloved daughter. Because otherwise you'll try to impress. And I just remember one of the first women's weekends at CWR that I did. And so we're going back about 20 years now. And, you know, we'd prayed as a team just before, you know, that actually that we would just be the channel for what God wanted to say. That in fact, that they sort of wouldn't see us. They would only really connect with God. Anyway, about a year later, I bumped into one of the women who'd been on that weekend, and I remembered her and we chatted a bit. She goes, "Oh, that was an amazing weekend. God really spoke to me." And she started listing the things that he had said. And actually, she outlined the whole talk that I'd given with no recognition that I'd given it. And I was thinking, she doesn't know that I said all those things. I remember, and it's God like saying, "Well, did you mean that prayer or didn't you?" I'm going, "Well, it sounded good at the time, Lord, but a little bit of recognition would have been nice." Can you see, we just, all of us, and we'll notice it in ourselves. You know, we'll notice when we feel the need to tell somebody else about this going well or our achievement or, "By the way, I do this," or, "By the way, I do that." And it's a huge temptation for speakers. You know, I have a list of good stories and, you know, I can just download those to you and not tell you some of the times where it's gone wrong as well. Because that desire to impress and that desire for approval is present in each one of us. And so to try and live from a different place that says, actually, I know who I am. I'm God's beloved daughter, on whom he lavishes his love moment by moment, is a very different place to live. So let me read out that verse again and just take a moment to think, what would it mean to believe with every fibre of my being that this is true? See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. See what great love the Father has lavished on you, on me, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. And if I walk into my workplace in the sure and certain knowledge that God's lavish love is absolutely focused on me, then when I'm dealing with that difficult person who doesn't seem to realise that I am just lavished, then actually there's a grace that I can offer them, because I don't need them to make me feel good about who I am. You see, and the danger is when I forget who I am, I look to other people to make me feel good about who I am, not God. And that always puts an agenda into a relationship that doesn't need to be there. So we need to improve our memories. You see, and if I remember who I am and that I'm his beloved daughter, then I also remember that he's somebody who's promised to speak to me. His sheep hear his voice. And so I start now listening for his voice. And it won't always say the things that I want it to say. But also I can ask things. So again, I'm going to tell you one of my good stories, okay? So just bear with me. I wish this was every day and it isn't. But I remember one day I just woke up and I just said, "Lord, it's a while since I've had a really good conversation about you in the workplace. I would love one today." So I was training at Esher Borough Council that day. So I drive over there, get into the training room, set it up, people come in. And unusually, at lunchtime, I decide to stay in the training room. I've actually forgotten at this stage that I prayed that prayer in the morning. Anyway, somebody comes back into the training room. I'll call her Sue. Sue comes back into the training room. And at this point, I'm just thinking, because I'm reading, I'm just thinking, oh, bother. Because I sort of got the training room to myself. But I just said, oh, you know, there's coffee over there if you want it. And if there's anything you want to chat about, I'm here. But if you just want to sit quietly, that's fine. Anyway, she sits quietly for a minute or so. And then she looks up and she says, I feel as if I'm just waiting to die. She's 39. She's not ill. I was going to go, it's that conversation, isn't it, Lord? It can be a bit slow at times. I said, oh, why do you feel that? She said, well, we're born and we die and we have these years in between. And what are they all about? Are they just waiting for the end to come? She says, and I feel so stupid. Nobody else seems to be asking this question. Well, one of my favourite books in the Bible is Ecclesiastes, and I've just been studying it. So I just said, you're not stupid at all. In fact, one of the people who was considered to be one of the wisest men who ever lived, King Solomon, wrote a whole book on this subject, on what it's all about. So we chat for a while. I've got a book by Selwyn Hughes in my bag called When Nothing in Life Seems to Satisfy. So I said, you might find this book helpful. And I give it to her. The delegates start coming in, end of conversation. Prayer answered, in the sense that I've asked God for that conversation today. Anyway, as it happens, I go into the council the next week to run a different course. She isn't on my course that week. I happen to go out at lunchtime. As I walk across reception, she walks through reception. She comes up to me, she says, I've read that book, I'm hooked. What next? So I said, get my journey into life out the bag. No, I think it was Why Jesus or something. As a trainer, I have to do what I call hit and run. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm only there for a day, so I have to have stuff with me. So I give her that, and I said, oh, you might like an Alpha course. I said, why don't you just go onto Google, put in the name of your town and Alpha, and see what comes up. By the way, can I have your email address and I'll check out? So I phone my friend at the diocesan office and say, any good alphas around, you see? She gives me the name of this. So I just email Sue and say, oh, you know, in case you didn't find anything, here's one. She said, oh, that's what Google came up with. So she'd already looked. Anyway, about 3 months later, she emails me and she says, and it just headed, it still grows. It still grows. And she said, actually, I didn't really get on with Alpha, but I joined the choir. And the lovely people in the choir explained to me what we're singing. And so my faith is growing. Now, all I did was pray. But when we're praying, what we're doing is we're coming into agreement with God's agenda. And God had an agenda for Sue that day that I got to be a part of. I didn't have to work at anything. I just had to be available to his agenda. And when you know who you are, you expect him to speak. And you expect to be able to join in with what your dad is doing. You see, it's never about asking God to help us with what we're doing, though he delights to do that. It's about having the fun of joining in what he's doing in other people's lives, in our workplaces, in our families. Finding out what he's doing and getting to join in. And then finally, I want to say that actually being fruitful is also remembering that we've got an enemy. Remembering that we've got an enemy. You see, if you forget that there's an enemy, you'll think that people are your problem. And in Ephesians 6, verse 12, it says this, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And I'm fascinated that Paul starts that, our struggle is not against flesh and blood. Why doesn't he just go into our struggle is against the rulers, the authorities, etc.? Because he knows that it will always, always look like people. When I started with prayer works, and what happened there very, very quickly, is that actually LICC had asked me to help them interview for a role called the Director of the Work Forum. And so I was in there interviewing with them on the Monday, and I was going in on the Thursday as well. And so on the Tuesday, I woke up, and God just downloaded this whole concept of prayer works to me, and 40-day prayer pathways that people in the workplace could join in. And so what actually happens is that people sign up by email for a prayer pathway, and from the day that they've signed up, the next day, they get 40 prayer prompts. And I know some of you are doing it because you've come up and told me. So we're now on our third prayer pathway. We have 2,700 people on the current pathway, and this just started from an idea that he downloaded one Tuesday morning. And I go into a meeting in our church that day, and I just said to the group that there, I said, I feel so stupid. I am totally excited about a job that doesn't exist. And they look at me and they go, of course it exists, Bev. It exists in the mind of God, which means it's in heaven, girl. Call it down. Call it down. So, well, by Friday I had the job. One day a week, working with prayer works. And as I said, we've just seen it go. The first prayer pathway, we had 1,800, and one lovely guy in ICC said, well, Bev, I was keen to support you, but frankly, I didn't think you'd get more than 50. And so actually, when it's a God idea and you get to join in, it's like whatever he wants to do. But early on, he spoke this verse to me, and he said, never forget that you're struggling against powers and principalities. So actually, when I hit a problem in the first month, and actually I couldn't get the time of this person in LICC whose time I desperately needed to set this up, and I almost felt she was avoiding me, and I knew there wasn't a personal issue between us, but I just thought, Lord, what is this? And the temptation to bring pressure to bear to get time. And I just thought, Lord, this isn't your way, is it? So I went back to him, and he just said, no, Bev, remember that you're not dealing with people here. You're dealing with powers and principalities. So I just prayed and fasted. And so the next Monday, I've got a half hour in my diary with her, but I'm not convinced it's going to happen. I arrive the next Monday, and in the meantime, Sam has joined us, and Sam was just volunteered to give some of his time, which took half the workload off this particular person. So she comes to the meeting, a different person than the person I've seen for the last month, and she says to me, Bev, I wasn't looking forward to meeting with you. I thought, yeah, I'd sort of pick that up. She said, because I knew that when I met with you, I'd get a whole ton more work, and I had no capacity for it. But now Sam's here, I have, and we just had an exciting meeting. Now, if I had put pressure to bear on her in a different way, I'd have destroyed a key working relationship that I've needed for the last year. Because actually, it was never about the relationship between us. Can you see? It was always about the resistance in the heavenly realms to what was going on. And so, if we forget that there's an enemy, and we forget who we are, and we forget who God is, we pick up different weapons. We pick up the world's weapons, instead of the weapons that God has given us. And you see, in every workplace, there'll be things that are operating. Just some of the common ones: deception, ungodly control, cynicism, fear, Freemasonry, confusion, judgment and criticism, jealousy, false ambition, compulsive competitiveness. I mean, what operates in the workplace that you're in? We need to be aware of it. And when we become aware of it, we need to remember who we are and remember who God is. So, for instance, if I'm aware of deception operating in a workplace, I just spend time worshipping God as the God of truth. If I'm aware that there's confusion operating in a workplace, I just spend time praising God that he's the God of light and clarity. Can you see? We actually come against this by focusing on who God is. Not focusing on the enemy, being aware of the enemy, but I never like to give him too much credit. So can you see? We focus on who God is. And I want to say that one of the enemy's key strategies is always to make you ineffective. And he does that. The major battle is always the battle for intimacy. And so his goal is to keep you from the place of intimacy with God. And he'll do that in a variety of ways. He'll do that by maybe bringing resentment into your life that things haven't worked out quite as you wanted it. And so that puts a barrier between you and God. Key one is to make you too busy. Key one. So we don't have time. Time is never the issue. Never. We always have time for the people we love. And as I was reflecting on fruitfulness, as you go through the Old Testament, what really hits you as you do a word study on fruitfulness is that fruitfulness is primarily about having children in the Old Testament. So I started thinking about this and saying, well, you know, what does it mean to be fruitful in our lives now? Well, those of you that are married know that actually children come about through intimacy. They don't come about through polite conversation with your husband. They don't come about through keeping the house nice and tidy and, you know, making nice meals. They come about through intimacy. And if we want fruitfulness in our lives with Christ, it comes about through intimacy. And actually, that's why the big battle in every one of our lives is intimacy with God. Because it's in the place of intimacy that fruitfulness comes. So when I know him as my heavenly bridegroom, when I know his love, and when I'm in a place, we love because he first loved us. His love for me is what awakens my love for him. And so when I actually allow myself to be in that place where he loves me, then my love for him gets quickened. And so I just want to encourage you that every day there is a choice. You see, we are intimate with something every day. I'll give you a quick example. Friday night, I went to the ballet at Woking, and a friend of mine was due to come, and he'd mucked up his day, and he phoned me and he said, Bev, I'm not going to be back in Staines in time for us to get over to Woking because I'm stuck in traffic coming out of London. Leave my ticket at reception and I'll try and meet you there. I might make it for the interval. So I'm driving there and I'm angry because he is notoriously disorganised. And I'm just thinking, oh, why did I even suggest that he should come? And I'm thinking, I know what's going to happen. By the time he arrives, I'm still going to be cross with him. So what he's going to pick up... You see, I am being intimate with anger at the moment. And frustration. And I just suddenly said, Lord, I don't want this. I don't want to be intimate with this because it's producing bad fruit. So I'm going to give to you the evening that I thought this was going to be and receive from you the evening that it is. And now I start to be intimate with possibility, with what the evening can be, because I've let go of what I thought it was going to be. And actually, as I walk from the car to the theatre, I hear a voice that I recognise. And it's somebody I used to train with 10 years ago. And so we end up, for half an hour, having a lovely coffee and catch up. And in the meantime, my friend arrives 1 minute before the performance starts. And I'm not angry at all. I'm just delighted to see him and I've had a lovely chat. Because actually I chose to be intimate with something different. We have a choice every moment of every day what we're going to be intimate with. And intimacy with the Holy Spirit produces fruit, godly fruit. So I'm just going to end by playing some music and inviting you to imagine something. Let me get the music set up just a minute, and as I talk. It's a song called Dance With Me, and I want you just to imagine, and you might want to close your eyes, and I'll put the music up in a minute, that actually Jesus comes, you're sitting there at the side of the ballroom. You all know how you're dressed, whether you're in the most gorgeous ball gown or your tatty old working clothes or whatever. And he's walking across the ballroom floor and he's looking at you and you suddenly realise it's you he's going to ask to dance. So as this plays, just spend a moment thinking, what is your response going to be? Because you see, he wants to go into your workplace dancing with you. He doesn't want you to go in there as a worker. He wants you to go in there as a lover. Because lovers are far more fruitful than workers. So just spend a moment listening to this and choosing what your response is going to be as Jesus walks across that ballroom towards you.